New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at ohiovoterguide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
This episode is brought to you by Experian. Are you paying for subscriptions you don't use, but can't find the time or energy to cancel them? Experian could cancel unwanted subscriptions for you, saving you an average of $270 per year and plenty of time. Download the Experian app. Results will vary. Not all subscriptions are eligible. Savings are not guaranteed. Paid membership with connected payment account required.
Good morning and welcome to episode 78 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name's Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. John, you look a little bundled up today. You preparing for the winter months ahead?
I am, and I specifically ignored my blue hoodie because I know how much I resemble a blueberry.
Not a blueberry.
yeah. But 78 episodes. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? I mean, 78. Yeah, that's crazy. We're going to have to, like, I mean, we're doing this over Zoom or whatever, so I don't know if we could share a cake, but I feel like we got to do something special for number 100.
Yeah, we're nearing the episode mark to where this pod would be eligible to be a columnist for a small Northeast Florida football team.
There you go. I mean, what other qualifications would you really want other than that?
Big week.
Huge week.
This game looked a lot different like 10 days ago. Coming off the Texans game, the Jaguars, it felt like they were like really hitting their stride. They just picked up like two decisive division wins. The only losses were to like a rolling San Francisco team, Kansas City in week two, and CJ Stroud in week three. It, like 2 weeks ago, it felt like a very successful season. Kind of feels like the wheels are coming off a bit. You know, since then, that the Jags have emphasized this week that they're not panicking. I think Trevor Lawrence said this week that he was like, if we were into this position last year, we would have taken it. Right. I think you'd still take a better position than the one you're in now. Like they've basically, like, they're not going to say they hate the position they're in, but there hasn't been a single person like at the podium this week who has been like, yeah, we don't like the spot that we're in. Tell there's a sense of urgency, but
yeah.
Baltimore Ravens on Sunday night. Jags are now 8-5. Like an hour before the Bengals game, people probably thought like this game would decide the number one seed in the AFC. Basically the Jags' only path to a number one seed now is winning out and hoping Baltimore loses to San Francisco next week. But like I posted. You know, if you go to my Twitter, look at my pinned tweet, you can see the different percentages of, you know, the different scenarios over the next 4 weeks, how they can make the playoffs. And somebody asked me to do the number one seed, and I refuse to do that until I see they can beat.
You should ask me again after Sunday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Ask me after this game, and then we'll talk about it. Like, for now, don't ask me about the one seed. Don't talk to me about the one seed. Don't even look at me if you're thinking about talking about the one seed. Yeah, it's a big one, though. And I mean, just like it really feels like they're getting the Ravens at the worst time too, because with the Jaguars playing their worst ball, doesn't it feel like the Ravens are like playing their best football this season?
Totally. I mean, like they've looked great all year, but I mean, they've really started to gel, especially on offense, like in the second half of the season, which is expected since they added two new starting receivers, and then they have a new offensive coordinator, and then. Like, the Mark Andrews injury obviously hurts them because that's easily their best pass catcher. and that's like Lamar Jackson's guy that were drafted in the same class. But I mean, Isaiah Likely has stepped in pretty well. He's a pretty good insurance policy for Baltimore. So this Ravens defense looks pretty legit on both sides of the ball. I mean, San Francisco kind of seems like they're in like a tier of their own right now. Like as long as I stay fully healthy, San Francisco is like the top dog kind of, but I think Baltimore is the best team in the NFL after them, mostly because of like how balanced they are. Like they've got just a really good unit on both sides of the ball. And then obviously like when you've got John Harbaugh and Justin Tucker, then your special teams will typically be pretty good for the Ravens. So yeah, this is it's a big game for sure. The Jags were 8-3 after the Texans loss or Texans win. At that point, they had two wins in a row and they were both over AFC South divisional opponents. But then they had that Monday night game. And if they had won that, they technically would have been the one seed for one full night. Because I think like the Chiefs or the Dolphins or someone, like, I don't know. I think it would have like only been for like really one night. And then like someone else was going to overtake them. But then obviously two straight games against AFC North opponents.
They lost to Jake Browning. They don't deserve us pontificating about the potential one seed scenarios.
I'm just saying I'm with you. They were like right there. And then like the past 2 weeks have been obviously brutal. And so like last week I was talking on the preview show about how like they seem to be so good at like bouncing back against adversity for whatever reason. And then we didn't really see it. So it'll be interesting to see whether it happens this week against arguably the best team they'll play all season, I guess behind San Francisco, but then also like in a primetime spot and at home, which was a major struggle the last time we saw it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was funny. Somebody asked Trevor Lawrence this week about, you know, getting another primetime spot. And he was like, it only matters if you win. He's like, yeah, we had Monday Night Football a few weeks ago, but, you know, they lost. So definitely, you know, just talking about, you know, leading off of the Jaguars offense. They've, to their credit, I know the offense hasn't been as prolific as anybody expected, but here are some of the defenses they've played. Cleveland Browns, number one in EPA per play. They're about to play the Ravens, who are number two in EPA per play on defense. 49ers are sixth. Saints are seventh. Falcons are eighth. Steelers are ninth. And that's what, like six teams in the top ten? But
yeah,
it's very much the Jaguars' way to face like the two best defenses in the NFL in back-to-back weeks. Like, I mean, we talked about this last week, like why the Cleveland I felt was a must-win game was because this game is so, you know, the opponent is so tough. So Jaguars' offense is not a lot going right with it. It had felt like the Tennessee, Houston, Cincinnati game, the passing game had like been more of what people expected. Trevor Lawrence was playing red hot, and then everything kind of went to hell, you know, in Cleveland. I don't think you can put all of it on Christian Kirk, you know, being out of the lineup. I think Cleveland having a top defense is definitely a part of it. But you look at, like, the state of the Jaguars offense, I don't think they know who's starting on the offensive line on Sunday yet. You know, Ezra Cleveland, Walker Little, both injured, both limited in practice this week. I'd imagine both will be questionable in some facet. We talked about Blake Hansen's struggles at tackle last week against Myles Garrett. I feel like that would only be like I feel like the health of the offensive line is one of the biggest storylines this week, just because of the way the Ravens generate pressure. They're not a team who's like lining up four guys and just going like the 49ers maybe. Like they're going to scheme up pressure, you know, like Mike McDonald, he's going to throw a bunch of different things at you. And when you have an offensive line who has so many moving pieces, I think that's when you start to see that factor in, because communication is that much, you know, more important. And the right side, like from center to right tackle, has stayed intact, but they've had, I think, six different starting combinations this year. And I want to say 11 or 12 different combinations that played on the field. And all but two of those combinations have been just changes at left guard and left tackle. Like there's like Anton Harrison left for like a quarter in week three, and Brandon Scherff left for like a half in week six. Otherwise, the right side stayed like intact. That to me is the big storyline to watch this week, Gus, because Like, you look at the Jaguars offense, they can't run the ball already. You know, I think it's a mixture of the offensive line struggling. I also think it's a mixture of maybe, you know, like their top running back isn't really the guy who can make things happen with a bad offensive line. And then the pass catchers, they're not on the same page with Lawrence. They're missing, you know, his security blanket. So this is already an offense that has to throw the ball to move the ball. But now you're doing it behind a leaky offensive line who's been injured, a bunch of moving pieces, and he's throwing the guys who, you know, like the two guys he trusts the most. One's Evan Engram, who I think is probably the best skill player, like, as of this moment. And the other is Zay Jones, who he just hasn't, even since he's came back from his injury, he hasn't looked right. Like, he looks slow, you know, like, it doesn't. And I think you can see that even, you know, in games, in practices. So there's just a lot of things not going right for this offense right now. And now you're getting the buzzsaw that is the Ravens defense. Is there anything about this matchup, like offensively, that, you know, you can really be positive about?
No, I would say like I do see like a path to the Jaguars winning, and that's kind of like establishing the run. And of course that like in order to like kind of establish the run, really lean into the run, you'd hope to be efficient to do so. But the Ravens this year are top three in EPA per play allowed and success rate allowed against the pass. And they're more middle of the pack against the run. And a large part of that is that they rank third in usage of light boxes and third in usage of two high shells on defense. And so they are top five in success rate out of those, but like they've got a lot of light boxes basically. And so like you're going to have to like take advantage of those light boxes and try to run. Last week when the Rams played the Ravens, they started out with seven straight runs on their opening possession. And I think that's like kind of what the Jags are going to have to do in order to like get a win. And like if the runs aren't working and then like you're not able to like build passing plays off of the run, then like good luck against this Ravens pass defense, in my opinion. But then if like you're somehow actually able to manage just 3 or 4 yards a pop on the ground to ease up the passing game. Because I think, like, the thing that would help, like, Zay and Ridley and guys like that the most is just, like, taking pressure off of them and, like, not having Lawrence drop back 50 times. So I think, there was a graphic going around last week that ETN had a bunch of carries, like, to the perimeter, but only, like, two carries inside the tackles last week. And so I think, like, even though it hasn't worked for much of the season, even going back to last year, the running game, I think you, like, at least have to try to lean into it a little bit.
The only three running games worse by EPA per play this year on the ground are the Jets, which understandable with that offensive line and that play caller and the quarterback situation.
Right.
The Chargers with Austin Eckler look like he's running in mud. Josh Kelly looks like he's running in slightly less slowing mud. And then the Giants at 32nd. And the Jaguars – otherwise, like they're like a bottom three, bottom four running team. I don't feel like they're the team that can take advantage against struggling run defenses, which I don't even think it's fair to call, you know, like you said, they're middle of the pack. Like Ravens, like they're 13th in run defense, like EPA.
Yeah, they're good run defense. It's just that they're not nearly as good.
For sure.
It
feels like the Ravens strategy is like kind of like the opposite of the Jaguars. Like they want to play for the pass and they're willing to sacrifice some stuff against the run. And I feel like you can do that when you're playing offenses that aren't good running the ball. And there's so much wrong with the Jaguars running game. I think from the running back to the offensive line, primarily to, I don't know, like even the tight ends, I feel like have struggled like in the running game recently, you know, like Evan Engram, like, yeah, he's not a blocker by like trade, like obviously he gets paid to be a pass catcher, but you play tight end, like you're gonna have to block. Like it's not a people, you know, like to theorize, especially during draft season with these like Dalton Kincaid like tight ends, like, oh, you can just put him in a slot, he doesn't have to ever block. And that's just not the reality. You know, like, yeah, you play tight end, you have to block. And right, Engram has struggled a bit blocking in recent weeks. Luke Farrell has been really hit or miss this season. Brenton Strange, it feels like, only really plays in 13 personnel. So maybe that's a part of it. Maybe if they get Brenton Strange back this week, do you think maybe that changes things? Because one, you can use more 13 personnel in the ground game, and two, maybe you can generate more shot plays out of play action.
I'm not going to say anything about his usage because last week I bet an over on Tank Bigsby, and that was horrific. I do think they're going to use more 13 personnel and like try to like run out of that and then like create some shots out of that. I also think that Jamal Agnew coming back could be a pretty big deal because like I know the Jags fans like are rarely excited to see him on offense. And I'm not necessarily advocating for them to get the ball into his hands, but I think just having him out in the field is A, he might be a little bit better than Parker Washington at this point. I mean, they seem just as reliable, honestly. But like he's like much, much faster than Parker Washington. And so just like having kind of like the threat of Agnew on the field is a lot different from having the threat of Parker Washington on the field. So I think both Jamal Agnew and Brenton Strange could make like minor differences.
That's odd. You didn't get the memo that Parker Washington is their best wide receiver.
I did not get that memo.
Yeah, it was sent. It was sent this week.
Oh wow.
I guess that brings us to our next one. Like the receivers, like the passing game obviously has to be much more cohesive than it was last week. That's what makes last week, I think, so baffling, like how off the passing game and offense were in general. Like their 27 points were fake points, in my opinion. They had two really short fields due to turnovers, right, and they had a garbage time drive when the Browns basically were just letting them get those 15-yard like completions underneath. To me, they had one good drive all game, and it ended in that Parker Washington touchdown. The big talking point all week has been the wide receivers and not being on the same page. Are they running the right routes, et cetera? Press Taylor, you know, set the record straight yesterday. Nobody's like – to me, when you say somebody's running the wrong routes, it means to me that they don't know what the hell is going on. They don't know what like the actual play is. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously, you know, not the case. It's just there is a very, like, thin line, and especially, like – like route running is very nuanced, you know, like just saying running a wrong route is a very general term. And I think this is a good example of it. Like they're running the right routes, but the specific like timing and how they're reading coverages, like people don't think about like how receivers have to read, you know, zone coverages and stuff. You're not just running a slant that looks the same way, no matter what, like it's Madden or something, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was their issue in Cleveland. The copium is that's because Trevor Lawrence didn't practice last week really at all. But I'm still hesitant to say that was that big of a factor because, I mean, he's thrown with Zay Jones a million times. He was in, what, game 13 with Calvin Ridley? Like, it was their 13th game together. Like, you should have a little more chemistry than that. Those kind of mistakes, like Press said yesterday, I thought this was another important point. Those kind of mistakes happen in games, like, all the time to all every team.
Yeah.
They don't always result in turnovers, and they just got incredibly unlucky that all three resulted in turnovers last week. But the pass catchers clearly have to be more cohesive and on the same page for Lawrence this week against another really good pass defense. Do you see that as something that can be fixed like over the course of like 7 days, especially like I think you have to factor in the strength of opponent, obviously.
Yeah, I'm not so sure because I think, like, the biggest area where you saw, like, Kirk's absence being missed is in, like, quick game, but, like, quick game specifically against pressure. Like, whenever Lawrence was pressured, he was looking to obviously get the ball out quick. And, like, Engram came up big a couple of times, but, like, whenever he was trying to get the ball to Ridley or Zay, like, quickly when he was getting pressured, it just, like, didn't really work out either because they were covered or, like, there was timing issues or, like, they didn't settle in the zone the right way. It reminds me of Dak last year when he threw a bunch of interceptions and like there was a whole, I don't know, debate or whatever in the offseason about whether Dak was good. And it's like, if you actually watch the interceptions, like a lot of them are fluky and like were tipped. And then a lot of them were also just like miscommunications with the receivers in a similar way where it's like Dak is expecting them to like settle in a zone, but then like they keep going. And so it's like, even though the interceptions all fall on Dak's like box score or whatever, like none of them are really actually, or most of them weren't really even his fault. And so it kind of felt like that last week too, where like three interceptions certainly doesn't look good, but I don't even know if like some of them were poor decisions for sure, but like you definitely can't put all of the blame on Lawrence. And so
I don't even know if any, honestly, I would say were poor, like poor decisions or even poor throws. It just felt like an extremely unlucky, you know, game where, you know, it was a great example where like the football comes down to the margins and the tiniest of, you know, details. And it, like when you're not hitting on those, it's, you know, not going to look good. So I definitely think that they obviously need a big week from Ridley, you know, this week. They need a big week from him, you know, every week. But I think especially, you know, on third down, I thought was a big area where, you know, they missed Kirk last week too. Ridley and Zay were targeted 8 times on third down last week, and, you know, they combined for 4 catches. So that wasn't obviously, you know, Trevor just doesn't have, I think, the connection with either one of them the same way he has a connection with Kirk. And, you know, Kirk's value to them is really that he's, you know, Lawrence's security blanket. You can debate his contract and stuff all day long, which I think is a very fair stance to take. But when you're just looking at his pure impact to the team, like, it's clear, like, he's like Lawrence's guy he goes to when, you know, things are going wrong. And when you play against Cleveland's defense, things go wrong often. When you go against Baltimore's offense, things are going to go wrong often. So I'm interested to see who is like his like quick answer this week. Gus, you got anything else on the offense?
No.
Okay, well, let's do it. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. All right, Gus.
Okay.
My bad. That's on me. Why not do what Trevor did on Sunday? Like, come on, guys, look at me. Be ready.
Right. It reminds me of there's a bit in Always Sunny where like Mac and Dennis have this like, I don't know, back and forth about control or whatever. I don't know. They have like this weird thing between them. But then like Mac like won't look Dennis in the eyes at one point in this one episode. And Dennis just goes, "Look at me when you're speaking to me." And so like that like voice was like echoing in my head as like Trevor was doing the look at me.
It's good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Now to defense. You know, last year, one of the most exciting games of Jack's season was Jags Ravens. You know, Lawrence and Lamar got into a shootout. Lawrence was like 29-37 for 321 and 3 touchdowns. Lamar, like his stats look slightly less impressive, 16-32 for 254 and 1 touchdown. But I came away from that game. I specifically remember, like, that was the first time I'd watched, like, Lamar, like, in person. I came away, like, thinking, like, dude, holy shit. Like, this guy is, like, crazy. And, like, he was, like, a lot of people don't remember that game, how many drops the Ravens had. I think Mark Andrews had like 3 drops alone, like with one or 2 of them in the end zone. Yeah. Lamar had that crazy deep shot to DeSean Jackson, like towards the end of the game to give Justin Tucker like a shot to win it. Lamar's, I don't know, I don't subscribe to the idea that Lamar has ever struggled as a passer. I think he's like always been like a top like 5 or 6 like passer in the NFL, like since his MVP season.
Pocket passer too. He's not just like good like rolling out of the pocket.
He's he's good from the pocket. Like people just they don't understand.
They don't watch the ball, John.
They don't. The ball watchers and the ball knowers is at an all time low rate, but I think you're getting like the best version of Lamar since his MVP season. I know maybe the volume numbers don't reflect that, but to me, their drop back passing game looks the best it has in his entire career. He has weapons. Odell obviously isn't prime Odell, but he can still go. Zay Flowers.
Prime Odell from time to time.
Yeah, good point. He had a great game last week. Zay Flowers looks electric as a rookie. He looks like the kind of player the Jaguars struggle with. Like the Jaguars just struggle with those like guys who are just lightning quick in a phone booth, like him, Deontay Johnson. They've always struggled against for whatever reason, they're the one team in the world that Kadarius Toney is able to have good games against. So just those kind of guys. I feel like Nelson Agholor has been honestly solid this season.
Solid wide receiver four.
Yeah. And then obviously Isaiah Likely. He isn't Mark Andrews, but I can very easily see in my head Isaiah Likely running, you know, buck free, like even the joke did last week. So that to me is the biggest, like, let's just start there. To me, the defense's issues, and I tweeted this out yesterday before somebody started tagging the Jaguars defenders in it and saying to fix this. So I took it down. I hate when people do that, dude.
Dude, it's so terrible. I had a tweet that was like calling someone out from The Athletic, and then like people started tagging the author. It's like, come on, like don't do that. Tagging the players is like much worse.
It's trash. So before that, it was like the Jaguars before their bye week were number 3 in EPA per play. Since then, they're number 27 in EPA per play. They've allowed 30 or more points in 3 different games to the 49ers, to the Bengals, to the Browns. The last 2 games, like backup quarterbacks have diced them up. And I know Flacco is a backup quarterback, even though he is, in my opinion, the best quarterback on their payroll. Like, I think he's a better quarterback than Deshaun Watson is right now, but he's still Joe Flacco. And Jake Browning's looked better than anybody thought he would, but he's still Jake Browning. You know, it's still like, get real, people, you know? So now it's Lamar Jackson. You know, like, he's not Jake Browning, he's not Joe Flacco. And to me, the defense's biggest issues these last couple weeks, they've obviously have had a lot of issue with play action. I think all of Flacco's touchdowns last week were on play action. Yeah. To me, the reason they struggle play action is because of the linebackers. And we've talked, like, the first, like, 10 weeks of the season, the linebacker play was fantastic. It feels like it's fallen off since then, you know, especially against play action. It seems like every play action play, Foye is crashing the line of scrimmage, and Devin Lloyd is basically standing still, like, kind of watching things develop while guys are running behind him. And I mean, you can see, in my personal opinion, I could be wrong, Njoku's first touchdown last week was on Devin Lloyd, who basically just stood there, you know, on a man pressure. And the second one was on the linebackers too, because you can see as Njoku's coming around, as, you know, Oluokun is crashing line scrimmage, Lloyd is like pointing at him like, no, dude, you got him, bro. And
yeah,
the linebacker play, especially the last 2 weeks, I feel like has been dismantled by play action because of that. Like, you have one guy who's more of a like needle line of scrimmage player, and then another guy who, it just seems like the last few weeks has just kind of been trending in the wrong direction. And then, of course, you know, the defensive line. Like, they're not getting much of a pass rush. Trayvon, he's better than a year ago, but he's still not, in my opinion, good. Like, that, there's no metric out there other than ESPN pass rush win rate that suggests that he is, which leads me to believe that they're the ones that are wrong. Like, if you're literally the only one saying he's as good as Josh Allen, I'm going to assume that there's something wrong with your data and how you interpret it. And I think a big thing is, we've talked all year how the Jaguars' defensive strategy is to stop the run on first and second down to force those third and longs. I think they've struggled on first and second down the last 2 weeks. You know, we talked about it after the Cincinnati Bengals game. My cat just meowed. Sorry about that.
That was a baby. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, no, he's over. He's just over one, so he's just kind of growing into it. So just don't judge him too hard for it, please. He's very self-conscious, much like his father. But nonetheless, we talked about it with the Bengals game. But the Bengals, like, forced the Jaguars to go light on the defensive line. And by light, I mean, like, a nickel package, like Josh Allen and Trayvon, and then just 2 defensive tackles. You saw Cleveland do that a good bit too, and the Jags just cannot stop the run on that. So it seems like teams have figured out, like, if you stop the Jaguars from putting, like, their heavy – formations on the field, the defense just isn't the same. The weird thing is, where the most injuries are at in the secondary, where they've missed Tyson all year, where they've missed Cisco, like, basically since week 5 and week 6, Tyson and Cisco have been not really there. Like, even when Cisco plays, he hasn't really been Cisco. Even when Tyson played,
especially when he compared to, like, when he was in the first month of the season when he was putting together like a Pro Bowl case. He definitely hasn't been like the same caliber of player.
Exactly. But what's weird is the most injuries, the most significant injuries are in the secondary. I feel like the secondary is the only part of the defense playing good right now.
Good is a word, but yeah. I mean, I think like the linebackers' problem is that they're like overcompensating for the defensive line up front, because like obviously the linebackers and defensive line kind of like work in tandem and work to like make each other's jobs easier, especially in the run game. And so like the Jags have been not a very good run defense pretty much since their bye week. And so I wonder if that's like Foye just like trying to like do everything he possibly can, doing his Miles Jack impression, I guess, of just trying to like be everywhere at once to like help solve every problem. Yeah, it'll be interesting because the Ravens, like there was a lot of talk about them doing a lot of 11 personnel this season, and they definitely have like increased their three wide receiver usage rates like since last year, now that they got Flowers and Odell in the building. And I don't know. I was going to say Rashad Bateman is a little bit healthier than he was.
I forgot about him.
He's not healthy, so.
I completely forgot about him.
Yeah, but like I think the thing to look out for the Ravens is like whether they have their fullback on the field. Holy cow, I can't believe I forget his name off the top of my head. He was a big part of the game last year because he got like a couple of random third down targets and didn't do anything with them, and that helped Jacksonville pull out the win. You know the Ravens fullback off the top of your head?
Patrick Ricard.
Patrick Ricard, yeah. Patrick Ricard is a big player to watch. Similar to like the Brenton Strange and Jamal Agnew coming on the field for the Jags offense, just like small schematic tweaks that can happen when different players come on the field. I think when Patrick Ricard comes on the field, then they're going to be in a lot of two running back sets. And they're going to be running a lot of gap schemes, which could hurt the Jags offense. This year, the Jags defense leads the league in run defense against zone runs in terms of EPA per play, success rate allowed, total yards allowed, first downs allowed, whatever you want. The Jags are the best defense in the league against zone runs. Against gap runs, though, they rank 31st in EPA per play and 25th in success rate. And so, Press was talking about the Ravens defense and was talking about, like, how their two defensive tackles, Michael Pierce and Mata Batutuke. I'm sorry I butchered that. I don't know how to say his last name. But the guy who's on a contract here, and he's been awesome. They've got two really good defensive tackles who can, like, hold up double teams and then let their linebackers, Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen, and then Kyle Hamilton, who's a safety that almost plays like a linebacker, just like let them rover around sideline to sideline. And so I think like Jacksonville just like doesn't have the same thing that Baltimore has right now, where they've got two defensive tackles who can actually handle a lot of work up front rather than like needing three guys. Because like you were saying earlier, when the Jags are in like base or when they've got like three down linemen, then that's like when they're best, because then they can like really shut down the run and get into good late down situations. But I think when Ricard comes on the field, then you should be thinking, this could be a gap run and the Jags could get gashed there. And then whenever Ricard is off the field, then like the Ravens will be in three or four wide receiver sets and be like spreading everything out. And then I think that's when you got to worry more about the pass defense, because like Tyson and Andre Sisco are both like questionable for this game, I believe, and they're both limited in practice on Thursday. So there's a chance they suit up. Even if they suit up, like as we just said, they're not really fully them. And then Trey Herndon has missed a game and a half, and so I'm a little bit worried about like Lamar Jackson with a good receiving core against this kind of banged up Jags passing defense, especially if like the Jags aren't able to get the Ravens into any third and longs.
Yeah, 100%. This Ravens offense has been incredibly efficient, especially on, you know, early downs as of late. I think you hit the nail on the head. Like it's obvious. Like, it's much easier to stop the run when you have three 300-pound guys on the field instead of two, you know. And you're exactly, you know, right. The Jaguars don't have those two guys in the middle. They went into this offseason, I think, thinking they did. You know, they extended Roy Robson-Harris, extended Devon Hamilton. I'm not going to knock Devon too much because his situation is just different. And yeah. You know, nobody could have foreseen, you know, anything of what happened to him. But I think that, you know, obviously Robson Harris, so not counting non-moves, like you can say, like any of their non-additions that, whether offensive line or in the draft or pass rusher were their worst moves, but not counting non-moves, just counting the moves they actually made, Robson Harris's extension was the worst move they made, right?
I honestly don't think the money is that bad for it. Like, I think if you ask him to be like, maybe not like a role player, but if you ask him to be like a low end starter next to like other good players, like, I think the contract is fine, honestly. But then like when Devon goes through his thing and then like Foley goes out for a game and then all of a sudden like Roy Robertson Harris is like the anchor in the defense, then you can definitely run into trouble. But honestly, like, I think he's like a good leader and kind of like almost like the face of that defensive line. And like, so I think
he's the only one who plays every game.
What do you say?
He's the only one that plays every game. Of course he is.
I mean, he definitely
got like gold stars.
He usually gets like worse and worse in the run game as seasons go on. But I don't know. I think the contract is fine. Yeah. It's just that
how many tackles?
It's all on him now.
How many tackles for loss do you think he has this year? He had 7 last year. You think he has 3?
Yeah. 1.
And 1.5 sack.
I was going to say, are sacks technically counted as tackles for loss?
No, no.
So 1.5 sacks and 1 tackle for loss.
So very potentially the same play. He's paid like the 25th best defensive tackle in the league. Is he the 25th best defensive tackle in the league? So that's, to me, is the problem with the middle of the defense line, is they paid 2 guys and really 3 guys with Fadakasi, you know, with his contract. And I'm not saying they gave them like $100 million contracts, but when you pay 3 guys, you're putting resources into that. You expect that unit to play better. And when it only plays well when they have 3 guys on the field, I think that's an issue. And, you know, Fadakasi, Hamilton, Robson Harris all just haven't been those impact guys this year like they're being paid to be. And I think it's had, you know, a trickle-down effect. I agree with you. I think I think Caldwell, like a lot of his blitzes and stuff, his big issue last week I thought was too many man pressures. Like, you know, throwing the zone pressures, like too many man pressures. Yeah. But it feels like he's compensating for the lack of plays made up front by anybody not named Josh Allen, which, you know, you do that this week and it's a death knell.
No, it's curtains. Since the week 9 bye, the Jags ranked 10th highest in usage of blitzes, or I guess 10th highest in blitz rate, and they were ranked 29th in success rate on blitzes. So I think it would definitely be a bit wise to dial it back. I felt like they were like just really trying to chase after Joe Flacco and Jake Browning and trying to like force turnovers out of them or just mistakes out of them. But I think they'd be better equipped to have more of a game plan that they had against CJ Stroud a couple weeks ago, where it's like they're sending just 3-man pressures sometimes and like getting 8 people in coverage and just like in zone coverage too. And like having just like all eyes forward, especially since obviously Lamar can hurt you with his legs. So yeah. They're going to have to like mix in blitzes here and there to kind of like try to force wonky stuff and keep Lamar on his toes kind of. But I think generally speaking, they'd be better off kind of like holding back a little bit and playing a bend don't break style of defense, which isn't really Mike Caldwell's MO because he's from Todd Bowles' tree and like wants to be aggressive and wants to get after the quarterback. But I think this week, like, you're just a little like outmanned with like the injuries that you have on the defense, and then with like the caliber of quarterback and offense that's coming to town, I think you gotta be able to adjust a little bit and just again like make it bend don't break, like, even if you're not getting into a bunch of like 3rd and 11 situations, like maybe just try to get into as many 3rd downs as possible would be what I'll do.
No, I'm with you 100%. I guess. Got anything else on the defense, my friend?
Nah. Actually, okay. I got a take, which is that the Jags are taking a defensive tackle or defensive lineman in the 1st round.
I think it's I think it's defensive lineman or offensive line.
I was originally on the offensive line train. Like I said, that guy from Duke was going to be their first pick a few weeks ago, and like I still kind of like that take. But like usually,
can't go back on that.
Well, I just after thinking about it a little more, I guess like interior linemen are like much more of a day two or day three pick. Like you rarely see interior linemen go on day one, and like if you do, it's like an objectively great center like a Tyler Linderbaum or like whoever the Titans picked last year, like who's like a tackle who's then converting to guard. So like I think they will draft interior linemen on offense, but I'd expect it more to be like in the second through the fourth round. And then same with per receiver, because I think we've talked about this before where it's like I'm sure Baalke will add a new face or three to the receiver room in the offseason, but I'm not so sure that he's gonna make a big swing to do so, especially with like the Jags already paying the receivers a lot of money next year with like, I mean, Kirk alone, but then like assuming Ridley is playing for you, like that's two like sizable contracts. And so you're probably not going to want to give out a big one in free agency or draft a guy in the first round. So I think that like all roads lead to defensive tackle being first round pick for the Jags in April.
Counterpoint, you cannot expect the Jaguars to draft like a modern team. They've drafted three linebackers in the top four rounds. They've drafted, a backup running back in the third round, a backup tight end in the second round. They do not subscribe to your Howie Roseman way of modern day drafting.
I would not hate the best available safety because I feel like whenever a safety is picked in the first round, like I mean Derwin James isn't really the same guy he used to be, but Derwin was sweet at the beginning of his career, and then Kyle Hamilton has been ridiculously good for the Ravens this year. He's like the new Derwin. He does everything. He's so good. So his injury will definitely be one to watch because I think was limited in practice this week after sustaining a knee injury last week.
Sign me up
for a first round safety. I think that'd be cool.
Branch has been awesome for the Lions this year. It does. I don't know, the bulky ball. Branch has been best in the slot. Did he find a slot in Antonio Johnson three rounds later?
I don't know.
You got bulky ball, my friend.
We'll see. I'm excited to watch more Antonio Johnson, but like he's a day three rookie, so I'm trying not to like put too many expectations into it.
Yeah, and I think just before we break real quick, I think another good point to your point about drafting defense linemen in the first round, I think they have to replace at least three interior defense linemen this offseason. You have to replace Ledbetter, who's one like just a guy really, Blackson, just a guy really, and then I'm expecting them to move on from Foley Fadakasi. So, you know, Tyler Lacy can replace one of those guys, like rotational snaps, but then that's two other spots you got to fill. So, definitely seems like that outside of Gostis, Robson Harris, and Devon and Lacy, that interior line needs to kind of be rebuilt this offseason. Gus, we're going to cut for a quick break, and we'll be right back with our picks and predictions.
Sounds good.
All right, Gus, I'm going to give you my lock of the week.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
We finally got some prize picks on here. Travis Etienne, under 14.5 rush attempts. Baltimore is going to come out firing. They're going to score early. Trevor, I think, is going to throw it 40 to 45 times. And Etienne only has one game since the bye week with more than 14 carries, and that was against – Houston. Yeah, he has games like 14 carries, games of 11 carries, games of 12 carries. Like they can't run the ball. It seems like outside of that little like Houston and Tennessee stretch, they stopped trying to run the ball because they know they can't run the ball and they know their only way of staying in this is throwing it. I got another one for you. Logan Cook, over 1.5 punts inside the 20. Go ahead and put
– what?
Yeah. Go ahead and bet the mortgage on that. He's going to have two punts inside the 20. And then Foye Oluokun over 10.5 total tackles. That feels like a – I feel – he had like almost 20 tackles against the Ravens last year. So that's a good bet to make.
No, I like that one.
And then last one, Evan Engram over 15.5 receiving yards.
50.5
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay, there's like there's two things on.
They Prize Picks has like a weird like promo going on for like Christmas where like you can pick a little red demon that's a harder prop to get or a little green demon that's an easier prop to get and they have different payouts. I'm ignoring the Christmas demons. I'm going
okay.
straight.
Yeah, no, I didn't know what that was. Okay, yeah. I was gonna say my lock of the week was Evan Engram over receiving yards, so 50.5 because like I think I also expect Lawrence to drop back a lot and for them to be in a negative game script. And like I think Zay and Ridley will also get plenty of opportunities to go over their respective props, but like against another elite defense, like after what we saw last week, I can't like confidently suggest that. But I think Evan will be able to get his I think ETN over receiving yards could be a nice play. Like we saw like ETN got over like 50 receiving yards, I felt like in one garbage time drive last week. I forget if it was the end of the game or the end of the first half.
It was the end of the game. It was like right before. It was like their last touchdown drive.
Yeah. So I think ETN over receiving yards could be another one. I'm not sure. Have you seen a Jamal Agnew line?
Go to hell. You're sick. All right. You're sick. I'm getting you a Gamblers Anonymous help book for Christmas. That was sick. Knew I see a Jamal Agnew line. That's a plea for help.
You know what you said? Over 1.5 punts down inside the 20 by Logan Cook. That seems like wild line to me. I thought you were just going to say over 1.5 punts.
No, inside the 20. Inside the 20, yeah. Lock it in.
All right. I think, man, that's tough. He's 100% sure going to get one. I feel like he gets one every game. We'll see. I like Gus Edwards over rushing yards because he's going to be like the main benefactor of Baltimore's like strength against weakness of gap runs against the Jaguars. And then obviously Gus is a cool name. So Gus Edwards over, maybe. Evan Engram over. That's really all I got. I feel like this. So, let's see. Zay's at 39.5 receiving yards.
If you were me. So, I, in my fantasy playoffs, I have both Keaton Mitchell and Gus Edwards. You would start Gus Edwards?
Yeah. He's also okay. The goal line back. Like, Mitchell is cool. Oh, I've got a good trivia question for you. Well, Mitchell is cool, but, like, Edwards just gets more volume and
I'm going to start Edwards, but if I lose, I'm putting, like, a cherry bomb in your exhaust pipe or something. Go ahead.
Okay. Fair. In the Super Bowl era, so since 1966 – Keaton Mitchell has the highest yards per carry of any running back in a single season, or the second best yards per carry mark in a single season of any running back with at least 35 carries since the 60s. Can you guess who has the all-time highest single season yards per carry mark?
Fred Taylor?
No. It is. Sister? No.
Leonard Fournette?
It's not a Jaguar.
James Robson. Okay, go ahead.
What?
Go ahead.
Devon Achane, fellow rookie. So it's pretty wild that like two rookies are putting together two of like the most efficient in a way.
Where did the Ravens find Mitchell?
Pretty sure he was undrafted. He was either undrafted or seventh rounder.
Crazy how that happens. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean he can't do anything in pass protection and like he's obviously winning. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Keaton Mitchell will like get his two. Like, I've got both Mitchell and Gus Edwards overs like written down in my big cap article right now. But I like Gus more than Keaton if I had
to pick one. I'm gonna start Gus, and if it may God help you if it doesn't work. But all right. Predictions, I'll start us off. I got Ravens 30-10. I think it's going to be a brutal, brutal beat down. I'm prepared to be wrong, but I'm sorry, man. I picked the Jaguars in so many – like, I feel like every game the Jaguars have lost this year, I've picked them in, and I'm not going to be the one who says that they're going to beat the Ravens. Like, they're playing their worst football right now. The Ravens are playing their best football. the Jags, I feel like the quarterback is still playing relatively well, but the pass catchers are not. He's missing security blanket. The offensive line's an issue. They're not running the ball, et cetera. And then the defense has fallen off a cliff against, I think, one of the top MVP candidates. I don't care about how many touchdown passes he's thrown. Lamar's, like, to me, it's like Lamar, Dak, and Tyreek are, like, and you, Christian McCaffrey, I think, are the four most valuable players in football this year.
Yeah, no, I like that take. I think that's a pretty clear-cut top three. I would agree with that, where it's
Dak. I still think Brock Purdy's going to win.
Oh, my gosh. I'm hoping – I think Dak has, like, a pretty – like, he plays at Buffalo this week, and he's got, like, a couple of big games. So I'm hoping that, like, Dallas is just able to, like, win so that – in for the sake of his MVP candidacy. Because then, like, if they drop a couple games and then Purdy keeps lighting it up, like – I'm scared. I don't want to see a Brock Purdy MVP. It's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going 27-17. So I guess that's just a 10-point game as opposed to a 20-point game that you predicted, but I'm in the same boat as you, where it's like the teams I feel like are like kind of going in opposite directions. Lamar is definitely, like, as you kind of said, it's like less of a statistical narrative and more of just, I guess, a narrative that Lamar should be the MVP. Like, if you just like watch him, you can tell the impact that he's making and how big it is. So yeah, I think I'm definitely not expecting the Jags to cover. And I think like the best possible outcome for the Jags is that they lose by like 4 or 5 points and they can like call it a morale victory because they like stuck it close with the number one seed for all of a Sunday night football game.
Yeah, I think that the Jaguars, their best outcome this weekend is waving their tiny yellow flags and hoping that the Steelers beat the Colts. Because if the Colts or Texans, I don't expect the Texans to beat the Titans with Davis Mills at quarterback. But if either one of them wins, things get interesting this weekend. So, Gus, you got anything else for me, my friend?
Yeah, one more take. The Jags need to hire a run game coordinator. There's not one listed on their staff site. I would assume that most, if not all, responsibilities go to offensive line coach Phil Rauscher. But it's also possible that it's like the run game is kind of like broken up by a bunch of different like coaches and assistants. Like, you handle like this situation of the run game, you handle this situation of the run game, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think, like, clearly, go ahead.
When he was hired, it was reported as offensive line coach / run game coordinator. I know it's not listed, but when he was hired, like that's what all the big leagues reported him as.
All right, so hire an assistant offensive line coach, maybe, is my take.
You think they don't have one?
I was talking to Mia the other day. She said they don't have one.
Yeah.
Do they have one?
Yeah, Todd Washington. Okay. Don't gaslight me, Gus.
Phil Rauscher, like, we both approve him. He's done a good job. But, like, hire a run game coordinator from Miami, from Mike McDaniel's team. Because, like, I feel like we've talked about how Doug is, like, a quarterback at heart and just wants to rip the ball. And, like, I feel like that's kind of the same deal with press, especially, like, when you're coordinating an offense that has Trevor Lawrence in it. And so, like, I think they need some juice in the run game. And I think, like we've talked a lot about, like, oh, is it the running backs? Is it the offensive line? Like, what are the issues? I think, like, I wouldn't call coaching an issue, but I think, like, it's an area that could improve. And so I wouldn't mind seeing the Jags make a hire to, like, bring in kind of like a run game expert in the offseason.
Yeah. That I can much more get on board with. They don't have an assistant. Don't gaslight me before Christmas. Oh, man,
I'm just saying, I think they only made two like coaching hires in the past offseason, and it was just hiring Chad Hall to replace the old receivers coach. And then, oh man, there was one other one where it was just like a position coach left, so they had to like bring in a new guy. And so I think it'll be interesting to see this offseason. Like, I'm not expecting like major shakeups at all. Like, I think the people who are like expecting anything different in the front office or like the coaching staff big time are like going to be let down. But I think like it'll be interesting to see if they hire like just one or two different guys to like help bring something new.
Yeah. Well, you got any other
Jim Bob Cooter left, and then they hired whoever the passing game coordinator is. That was the other one.
There you go. All right. Got any other staffing takes for us, or are we good to boogie out of here?
Now it's boogie.
All right. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back on Monday. Not sure if it'll be Monday morning. Gus and I haven't talked about it yet. I'll talk about it right now. I'm not going to do Monday morning, Gus. I'll see you Monday afternoon.
Right. Okay, that works, yeah. Right, Monday afternoon. Sounds good.
Thank you guys for joining us, as always.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.